From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Dumbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's installment of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Dumbele. It's always a privilege to be sharing this space and time with you, albeit the rather chilly condition here in South Africa. But be that as it may, you know, on this show, we pride ourselves by bringing, you know, practitioners that have a very good insight on some of the topical issues that bedevils, corporate, as it were. In tonight's conversation, we're turning our attention to a subject that gains increasing attention in the leadership cycle, which is the self-mastery. You know, the question is, so we know that self-mastery, how does it fit within the broader leadership equation? And we all know that it's not simply just a personal attribute. It is a leadership capability that shapes the judgment that decision makers are making. Just to put it personally in context, we know what has happened in the City Mani. We know what has happened at the Zondo Commission. We know what is happening at Mazanga Commission. So these are all issues that comes to bear when you look at the ability to self-master one's ethos or not to. And in any case, I'm just told that I've got Jabuzwane here, who has written a book which I haven't really read. I promise to read your book. Just before I introduce him, Jabuzwane is the leadership mentor and executive coach and organizational development specialist. He'll give us a very good sense of how we locate self-mastery, so to speak, in the context of organization, as it were, because ultimately we understand that in as much as you've got to have structures, you've got processes, you've got systems with organizations, decisions are still made by individuals. And, you know, there's so much that we have gained or so much that we know on some of the very questionable decisions that some of the corporate leaders are doing. Not only in corporate, pretty much across society. You know, we've seen it in churches. We've seen controversial decisions in churches. Mm-hmm. We have seen controversial decisions in NGOs. We have seen controversial decisions in corporate and so on and so forth. I mean, so these are some of the issues that really gives us a very good sense on what is actually happening, so that we're able to reflect on these and the lesson that we're picking up from our esteemed guests are able to be plowed back, in our own individual spaces. But before we go on to the gist of our conversation, let me thank Simpiwe Zama, who organized the show, and thank you so much for organizing my good doctor here, which I will briefly introduce in a short while. And of course, Craig on the controller, pressing all the right buttons as we interface with our commercials. Last but not least, I want to thank you, the beloved listener of the show. And while I'm plotting, while I'm thinking of you, please weigh in on our conversation. As you normally do, our WhatsApp line is 061-895-10195. And of course, your views and thoughts are most welcome via my X handle, which is _ Dr. Mbele. Having said that, I think I've pretty much given a sense of what we are all about tonight. And let me not waste any more time and welcome my guest, Dr. Zwane. Good evening and welcome to Young Governance, sir.
Good. Just to give you a bit of a correction, that's Dr. Njabulani James Nkosi.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Yes.
I have no idea, you know, we're going to pick it up with Mokondi.
I beg your pardon.
And I think I've made a huge, huge mistake there. But anyway, Simpiwe Zwane, Zama, let's correct this because for some reason. But anyway, be that as it may. Welcome, sir.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Because you're coming for the first time, at least in my show.
You could have
been here on other shows.
Of course.
Who is Njabulani Nkosi?
All right, cool. So I'm basically a doctor of ministry. I'm a program management professional at one of the foremost banks in the country, leadership mentor, an author, speaker, and certified life coach. And my experience in the corporate space spans back about 12 years. In the project leadership space, I joined as a consultant, a business analysis and project leadership consultant back in 2014. And my journey since then has led me across multiple complex programs and projects, delivering into Africa, delivering mobile applications across the globe. And then also now I've moved into the payments as well as the fintech space, which is the bleeding edge. And then also I've spent another 12 years of my life in the Toastmasters International. That's the foremost leadership and public speaking development organization in the world. If you've never heard of them, you should look them up. You should join them, because if you want to take your speaking and your leadership to the next level, that's where you should definitely do some work there. And then I also spent time doing a lot of leadership development and coaching in that space as well. And one thing I can tell you is that leadership is not something that's easy. It demands a lot of integrity from you. It demands a lot of focus, and it demands one of the best ways I can say about being a leader is this. I recently became a father. 9 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah. Buy the books, guys. The nappies are expensive. So what are the best analogies that I've ever been able to find about being a leader, which I see a lot of corporate leaders, as a lot of faith-based leaders seem to get wrong, is that leadership is akin to you being a parent. Right. So what do we want for our children? We want them to do far more than we ever could have wanted for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We want our ceiling to be their floors. We want to be the giants that the giants on whose shoulder they stand on. Now, when it comes to your children, if they start underperforming, what's the first thing? Are you going to fire your children?
No, of course you can't do that.
Are you going to fire the children?
But hold on, just hold in line of thought, because I think it gives us a very good insight of the trajectory of the conversation moving forward. But I want to locate, this leadership or self-mastery, which is the gist of our conversation, because we know that when you speak of self-mastery, perhaps maybe from your perspective, just unpack it for us. What does that mean from what you know and what you've experienced and what you practice?
No, 100%. So self-mastery is in the name. So you have to be able to master your own internal self. Mm-hmm. And how can you master yourself if at first you don't have an idea of who it is that you are and what your internal values are? Mm-hmm. Because you cannot get a person to act contrary to what their internal values are going to dictate. So I've seen a lot of people in the corporate space, also in the project leadership space, they end up being frustrated by the people that they are leading and the people that they work with. I'm like, I cannot get this person to fill the timesheets on time. I cannot get this person to show up to the meetings give that presentation, whereas and you don't understand what that those person's values are. So if you align a person's task or a project to, like, if Nimrod values being on time, like time is something that you value, then if I do not communicate with you in terms of your values or you valuing being on time, then we're not going to be able to, have a good relationship. And so self-mastery starts with making sure that you know that the individual understands what their own internal values are, what inherently is it that they value. And then also, you can't get a person to engage in self-mastery if they don't actually want to be involved in self-mastery. So certain things that you are responsible for, you can be responsible for yourself, but you are not responsible for inherently making a person master themselves. So that's an important element, because a lot of training interventions can be run. You can get people to engage in learning and development and send them on self-mastery courses, but if they are not tailored to what that person values, then you're going to have a very difficult time. Because if you see a lot of malpractices that are happening, you mentioned that there's a lot of malpractice happening in government. We know some of them. We shall not name them. What I know is that I cannot have a Black Woolworths bag now because of what has happened out there. A lot of reasons Someone said to me, "It's like, do you want to know why a person doesn't value being on time?
Mm-hmm.
It's because they've never sat down and made that a value for them. You've never sat down and written that down."
Just hold on thought, and Jabul, what is coming out very clear for me, it's something that perhaps maybe we take for granted around work readiness.
Yes.
Every now and again, when you've got a new employees mm-hmm. Who come through the system, most organizations will run a work readiness program.
Graduate that, development program, something like that.
Not even graduate, but work readiness.
Okay.
Because we make an assumption that you could be an executive, mm-hmm. but you may not necessarily be ready
mm-hmm.
For that particular context, for that particular environment.
Correct.
You know, because the values are not aligned. So which says to me, perhaps maybe one of the biggest mistakes that corporate has done is to assume that Njabule is coming in mm-hmm. at this particular level.
Mm-hmm.
He already encapsulates certain values
mm-hmm.
without necessarily testing
yes.
whether your internal values align with that organization.
Correct.
How do we navigate that? What are we thinking about? Let's take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele, and I'm going to correct myself here. I'm joined by Dr. Njabule James Nkosi.
Yeah.
You know, I beg your pardon, because for some reason I called you Zwane. And it does occur to me, I had a Zwane not so long ago, but for some reason my notes just went bonkers.
No worries.
But be that as it
these
may,
things happen.
You know, my sincerest apologies, because there's one thing, you can't be messing around with people's names.
No,
you
know? No.
Just now your wife is listening to the show.
I was about to say, I'm about to explain.
Who is this guy? What is he
it's
talking
about? Like, I thought you were on radio, but who's, where were you really? Now I need to explain where I was. No, no worries.
It's no, great stuff. But here's the thing. Before we took that short break, I mean, I think there's a very important point around alignment of values.
Yeah.
Which I then said, given the fact that we in corporate, we often make an assumption that if you come at a particular level, it's understandable when you are doing an internship,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're relatively younger. And inductions, you know, some of these things are done rigorously. Mm. But as you progress, you know, because some of the malfeasance we're seeing are not done by juniors, you know, are done by so-called expertise or seasoned officials.
Yeah.
Which then says perhaps maybe part of a reconsideration from the corporate point of view is to reassess or realign the review the values.
Mm.
But how do we test? Because these are some of the things I would imagine are still being done. But how do we test whether your values mm-hmm. as Nkosi are aligned to Mbele's and association, for an example?
Yeah. So one of the hardest things to do is to make sure that once you've got the person, that they're actually displaying those values. Because sometimes there's a saying in recruitment that sometimes you don't know what you get until you've got it, right? Yeah. So one of the guardrails you can put in is during the recruitment process, there needs to be an enhanced level of rigor. Because if you look at the Ivy League universities, when you are going through their esteemed MBA programs or DBA programs, they use something that's called the case method that actually simulates the scenarios that you're going to be going through, and that will be able to test your temperament and test your work ethic and test how it is that you do work. That's one of the things that I've seen organizations implement to say, we're not going to just have like a 1 hour interview and say, now we've got you. It has to be a lot more rigorous. And you'll find that a lot of the organizations that are having these, what we call the fat cat syndrome. I don't know if you've heard of that fat cat syndrome.
Yeah.
What happens is that you get the executive that comes in, and then because they've got a pay package guaranteed, they won't perform. And then when it's time for them to be let loose, you still have to cut them the severance package and still live with their millions of dollars. One of the ways that you find these organizations going through the syndrome is that their recruitment process did not have that rigor. That includes being able to test the person's values, because they are pressed for time. to hire that individual. There's a void in the marketplace, and they don't want to take the time and the rigor to make sure that the person matches the values that they have in the organization. And a lot of HR professionals are making sure that they are enhancing their recruitment processes now, so that some of them have like five rounds of interviews. I don't know if you know, five rounds of interviews for executive positions, because that's something you cannot necessarily play around, because if that person leaves, it's about 3 months for you before they can go somewhere else.
But on the same note, I'm just going to interject there, because, and again, one in my personal experience, and I'm sure a lot of people have the similar experience, you know, assuming you've done, you know, a rigorous, you've got a very merit-based template that does the recruitment, the selection, and induction, and all those good things. And you will still go through in the public sector what we've gone through, you know, in the state capture, despite the PFMA, despite King 4, despite all the regulations that are meant to guide, you know, ethical orientation of executives.
Yes.
And yet we still find malfeasance. You know, coming back to the same issue, when you look at what happened at Steinhoff, this is Ivy Corporate, you know, with all the seasoned executive from HR, finance, law, and so on and so forth. You know, what do we? How do we explain those kind of you know, outcomes, despite having pretty much, you know, I mean, Steinhoff lost billions of rands. You know, we lost billions of rands through state capture and so on and so forth. The lessons for leadership, what does it mean? Because we understood the importance of self-mastery, but also about independence, because one thing that seems to be missing from a leadership point of view is sense of independence in relation to how you value, you know, the kind of decision that you take within an organization, whether those decisions are serving, you know, the best interest of the organization, and basically due diligence.
Yeah.
How do you close that gap?
So you close that gap by questioning the leaders in the organization already, because you need to hold the leaders in that organization to account. They say the fish rots from the head. So if I'm looking to recruit an MD and I already have a rotten culture, I have a culture of thievery, I've got a culture of, you know, finding loopholes in all of the governance processes, then how can you expect someone who's going to be recruited into the organization to not do exactly the same thing? There's a saying that monkey see, monkey do, etc. So what happened at Steinhoff, from, if I just look at just from a pure leadership perspective, is just looking at the integrity was in question. The practices were also in question, and also the intent of those people in leadership was not that of serving the people at their charge. They was just there to loot as well as to pillage, and that's what was happening there within Steinhoff. So it starts with the leaders who are in the organization, and they're not going to recruit someone who's going to be contrary to the values that they have. It's going to be very difficult. I mean, my father worked in as an HR executive for multiple years, also in the mining sector, and he also had to deal with people in the public sector as well. And one of the things that he did find is when they were trying to recruit him, many times he would go to the interviews, he could do the case studies, and then he said, I'm absolutely not going to join that said organization. And I said, why are you not going to join the said organization? He said, it's because I will be taken out. Because he came in with the mindset that I'm going to serve and I'm going to do do what's right, what's right in his eyes. And then the people that were there, they were just there to like fill in quotas. They were there to fill the position, and also they were also there to quote unquote line their own pockets. So how do you stop that from happening? You hold the people and the system that is rewarding them to account. That's how you do it. And who's going to do it? We're seeing it with all the commissions that are happening now. It's a beautiful thing that what's happening, holding people to account, because even if it's public sector, private sector, if you don't have the mindset that I am there as a servant to the people, not just there for me to line my own pockets, then you're going to see all this malpractice that's currently happening. So you need to hold the leaders to account, to right values and to right standards, that you're there to serve and you're not there to loot and pillage.
You know, you just reminded me of what I've heard this morning on my way to my office.
Yeah.
We know now the Department of Social Development, the minute the president appointed the former Minister of Telecommunications, Diana Pule, who's now serving as the Minister of Social Development.
Yeah.
And the issue is that when she was being interviewed, well, she was making a first interview or press conference today.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, she was fired by Jacob Zuma back in 2013 for a whole lot of malfeasance. And now she's coming back as a minister, even though the appointment is controversial. The president has, there are politics behind these things. But I was quite fascinated by what she said. She said she has learned that leadership is all about serving the people, you know, and she will no longer abuse her ministerial positions, or she won't, you know. I find it so fascinating because that is common cause, that you are there, you are serving people. Why did you have to be fired?
That's terrifying. That's very terrifying. So it took you 13 years in the quote-unquote wilderness for you to realize that the job that you are supposed to be doing is to serve other people, and you had to get fired and spend 13 years, I don't know where she spent the past 13 years, for it to click in your mind to say, I need to be able to serve the people. Now, that's questionable. I understand why there's a lot of controversy around that. The question is there, is it a case of you've actually learned your lesson? Now, how do we know proof points? What proof points do we have that you've actually learned your lessons? What have you actually shown that you're actually serving other people? What tangibly, what can we see that you've been there to serve other people for you to have learned your lesson? I don't want to use this example, but I'll use it. If you commit a crime, whether it's murder, arson, you get sent to prison, get sent to jail, you serve a sentence so that you have been reformed. That now shows that you're no longer a menace to society, that you've been reformed. Now you've served your sentence. That's like 15 years. Mm. Now we trust the
system. You've been rehabilitated, reinvigorated.
Now with corporate leadership, it's harder to tell. Not even corporate leadership, public servant leadership. You've spent 13 years, we don't know where you were, but now you're being reinstated into a ministerial position, and only now you're saying that now I'm a servant of the people. I can understand why it's controversial. We could be able to give the person the benefit of the doubt, but still, for you to have a ministerial position and only now say, I'm here to serve the people. The people that appointed you, did they not tell you that this is, do you get what I'm saying? Did they not tell you that we're here to serve?
It comes back to the same point of readiness, which we don't have to take for granted.
Mm.
But clearly, in some spaces, how the induction is done, because I would believe all the ministers have been inducted.
Yeah.
There's a rule book. They take an oath. Mm. And all those, principles around the constitution are there.
Correct.
And it's very difficult to suddenly see now because you, but anyway, it's another debate. But I just felt it very interesting that,
To also add to that, you'd also need to have an organization, they have a probation period.
Mm-hmm.
For them to assess, are you living up to what you said you would do? Are you performing to the levels that we expect you to perform at? And are you displaying the values that you said that you would also display? Now, sometimes the probation process and period and criteria may be a bit lax, which is why you'd see about the work readiness. Some very high-performing organizations that do this. Nimrod comes in, he's got a probation period of 3 to 6 months. Mm. And in those 3 to 6 months, regardless of your level, there's interventions. When I say interventions, not a bad word, like training interventions, like organizational training interventions, and then you perform as if it's exam places, and then you get scored, and that is a way that you can show what the quote unquote work readiness is, because it's very difficult for me to assess if Nimrod is now ready to perform the role of MD, CEO, CIO within a month. or even a 3 months or even a year. I mean, there are some CEOs who are coming under fire for getting X amount of pay packages when they're like, have you even finished rearranging your office? We don't know what you've done and you're already getting this pay package. It goes back to what you're saying, the work readiness. Have you proven that you're ready to do the work? So some organizations, they do that. 3 to 6 months and you've got interventions. In the work environment, one of the things that I do see lacking is, because you know in sports, where the World Cup is on right now, hopefully Lionel Messi gets to the final, we'll see. In sports, let's say in football, you go to training, then you play the match. Then train, then you play the match. You train, then you play the match. What organizations are doing now is that you perform, play the match, then you get a training intervention. Mm. You perform, then you get the training intervention. Whereas then there should be more training interventions, more often, more frequent than every 3 months. Now you have a masterclass. There should be masterclasses every single week.
No, absolutely. On that point, what are your views? I mean, this is a very interesting conversation that you're having with my guest here, Njabulo James Nkosi.
Yes.
You know, and what are your thoughts? Our SMS line is 061-895-10195. And let me hear what you think. You've got a question for him on how he tackles the issue of leadership, or what has been his lived experience navigating leadership challenges within an organization, how he advises, because he's obviously a coach. So I would imagine he has one-on-one with executive, or it doesn't really matter what level it is, one-on-one with those with official to suss them out and give them guidance on how to improve and become better. Njabulo, one of the things that we often are guilty of as corporate leaders, you know, across the spectrum, is that we're often looking at addressing the root causes of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the symptoms, but not the root causes of the problem. Every time, you begin to wonder whether the control environment is tight enough.
Mm-hmm.
Control I'm referring to, you've got a policies. The second line of defense is obviously managers doing what they expected to do because they're getting paid to do what. And you are also expecting the role of internal audit to be doing its work. You're also expecting the subcommittees of the board to be doing their work. You know, these are different layers of controls such that the AG is not shocked, you know, when we get to hear that there's so many millions on irregular expenditure, so many millions on, irregular expenditure or a fruitless expenditure. Why is it this controls environment are not really working? Such that we don't really, get shocked that so much money has been used or lost along the way. From your point of view, understanding is a very complex phenomenon, and because you still were dealing with individuals, some of them they are obviously being employed or are serving at the behest of, someone who brought them in.
Mm-hmm.
Some obviously don't have credentials, the political appointments. Others, his cousin, so on. So I know those are some of the complexities.
Who was my best friend?
Right? Given those realities, how do we bump up the control environment in relation to in the meetings that happens? The reviews that happens on one-on-one, up to a point where we're sitting at board adjudicating billions of rents. How do we tighten up, these lapses that potentially embarrasses the leader at the end of the day?
Yeah, you don't want to be in a board meeting. You're being asked where the 50 million rand went on a certain project. I've seen some of those meetings. They're not fun, right? So I'll put on a project program leadership hat on because in my tenure of delivering complex programs, I've had instances where I had to explain myself to the board of the company and then the regulator. I'll name the regulators like the SARB. Now you need to explain to the South African Reserve Bank about X amount for why what's happening on the project, or the FIC or the NPSD or one of those governing bodies. And one of the things that the most interesting that thing that we found is that there needs to be a certain level of rigor, standard, and excellence from the top all the way down. And at the grassroots is where the problem is. Because if you've got inaccurate reporting at a, let me use, at a micro project level, that will be the same at the program level, then the portfolio level, then it's going to be the organizational level, then it's going to be at the national level. Yeah. So what you're finding is that if you've got inaccurate or lackadaisical reporting and controls at the grassroots level, it's going to filter all the way up. So one of my lawyer friends, he treats every single meeting as a board meeting. So you come in, you're not allowed to come to a project meeting dressed all lackadaisical. You will be there in a suit, in a tie, with the minutes and the memos. You would have done your pre-reads at the smallest project level. So that when it comes up to the board level, because all that is just a conversation just at a different level. Because the board will ask similar questions that you'll ask at a project level. Now, if at the project level you are miscounting rands and cents, by the time it gets to the board level, that's exactly the same thing that's going to be happening there. So what I found in my own experience and what I've had to do in my program leadership journey is that at the project level, you cannot have any lackadaisical accounting, reporting, timesheet capture, governance at the grassroots level, because it's definitely going to filter up to the board level, and then the person who's in charge of the program or the division is going to have the hard conversation when they said, but also a little by little becomes a lot. The small things matter. There's a book that says, "Don't sweat the small stuff." Yeah. You need to sweat the small stuff.
No, absolutely.
By the time you get to the board level,
it's too late.
Exactly. The group CEO is asking, or the regulator is asking, so now this 50 million rand lost, or 100 million rand lost. What happened? And every time you run a post-mortem, it goes down to at the micro project level. You are very lackadaisical in your reporting, and that goes down to the values. If you don't value accurate reporting, then guess what happens at the board level? All of these big expenditures that have been lost, the billions of rands and the hundreds of millions of rands or dollars even, they didn't just happen overnight. They were an accumulation of the small malpractices that happened over extended period of time. And because they were not caught, because they were not addressed, or because people didn't want to address them because they knew exactly where that money was going to line their own coffers, potentially, that's when it was actually lost.
Yep. We're going to come back after a break. One thing that I'm picking up from what you're saying, and again, it's about information asymmetry, because sometimes we are caught napping, purely because we were deceived. Because if I'm the project manager, I've got detail. You're my boss. You don't have the same detail that I have.
Correct.
But what I give you at the superficial level, and when you take it to the next level,
It's diluted further.
Because that's information asymmetry. But how do you circumvent that? Because that is a practical reality of any corporate.
Yes.
After the break.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It is now 7 o'clock. I'm having a very interesting conversation with Dr. Njabulo, James Nkosi.
Yes.
Abu Nkosi Abu Bani.
Abu Dlamini.
Abu Dlamini.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah, Stibledlel.
Oh, Stibledlel, not super cool. Okay. Anyway, welcome back. This is a very interesting conversation that we're having here with Njabulo Nkosi. Before we took that break, one thing that we often don't appreciate is the complexity of running an organization.
Yeah.
There are so many competing priorities. Mm. The pressure points are very high. Mm-hmm. You're chasing the deadline. Mm-hmm. You're relying on the next person mm-hmm. to do his her best. Mm-hmm. And we often assume that the next person has your best interest at heart.
Bad assumption. But an assumption nonetheless.
You know, but how do we conscientize managers to be aware, not to second guess the next person, mm-hmm. but having your gut up all the time? Because I've seen, you know, over the past 30 years or so at the senior level, I've seen how some of my colleagues were compromised purely mm-hmm. because they didn't have, correct information, mm-hmm. pitched at the right level. Mm-hmm. And you can begin to see that, you know, politics are being at play here. Mm. How do we manage, from a coaching point of view?
Yeah.
How do you sensitize, officials or executives to be mindful of politics, so that they are able to arrest any nefarious intentions mm-hmm. Earlier on before, you know, the big bang, so to say.
No, 100%. So. I went on a course with Dr. Naverne Potsmer. I'll put her on. She wrote a book called "Do Office Politics Before Office Politics Does You." Now she's doing a PhD on the topic, and then also she spent quite a lot of time doing research at the public sector and also the private sector, and going through that book and also implementing it in my own life and also coaching people based on the contents of that has been very, very useful. So when people say politics, it's always got this this bad connotation to it. It's like, I don't want to play politics. Mm. But now if you reframe it, you'll call it understanding relationship dynamics. Mm. Because at the end of the day, if you say politics, you're not going to want to engage with stakeholders. Mm. You're not going to want to engage with people. Mm-hmm. You're not even going to want to work at the highest levels of the organization. There's a quadrant that you can use for senior executives mm-hmm. as well as the junior executives and also those junior managers, the middle managers. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones who are not trained as much as they should be because they're not the juniors. Mm-hmm. They get all the graduate programs, the work readiness, mm-hmm. and then the executive leaders, they get sent on conferences mm-hmm. and, executive mm-hmm. coaches. But then the middle management is where I played in for quite a while. You don't get as much coaching as much mm-hmm. as possible. So the middle managers as well as executives, what they all need to understand is what role are they looking to play in an organization. So there's four roles they can play. The quadrant says at the bottom, that is the organization goals. And then at the top quadrant, that is your personal goals. So then now this explains to you how you understand certain people in the organization. So those people who sacrifice their business goals and their own goals, they're called dimwits. fools, because you're doing things to sabotage your own personal goals and the organization's goals. For example, I've heard a story of a junior developer going in and deleting something in production. He had to get fired for that because I'm like, why are you doing something like that? Because that's just scoring an own goal, so to say. And then you've got someone who's a martyr. And you don't want to be a martyr. A martyr is someone who sacrifices their own personal goals for the goals of the organization. Mm. And if you're in that position, people will use you and will misuse you. Because there was a case where this lady, high-flying, and she did a lot of work. She was sick and was in hospital, and she was still getting calls from a boss and a manager day by day by day by day. And then because she didn't want to take care of her own health, the manager called her, and then the doctor picked up and said, hey, this lady's now dead. Mm. Now, you don't want to be a martyr, working 15 hours a day, and then all of a sudden, now your health is compromised. Now, the other two is where we want people to be aware of and to play. In a lot of organizations, we've got the sociopaths. Mm. These are the people who sacrifice the business goals for their own personal goals. Mm. They want the promotion. They want the PR. They want the media. They want the positions. They quote unquote play all of these politics, all of these games, so that their own aims are met at the expense of the organization and the martyrs and the dimwits. But what we want is people to become winners. And how do you become a winner? You align the organization's goals to your own personal goals. So that's so when I found that out, how to be a winner, I said to myself, let me figure out what each person's personal goal is and what the business goal is. And I align every single meeting, every single engagement, every single piece of communications to meeting the organization's goals, because no one person or no one division should ever be bigger than the organization. And that's what we're finding in a lot of corporates nowadays. People are, their own interests are becoming bigger than the organization. Like in football, no one player is bigger than the team. And it should never, ever be that way. So when speaking to executives, speaking to especially the junior leaders, you need to say you need to become a winner. And a winner is look at what the organization wants to achieve. And if what the organization wants to achieve is not what you want to achieve, go find another organization, because you're going to frustrate yourself and you're going to frustrate everybody else. And that's why sometimes public sector is very difficult, because if I'm a winner, I want to serve, for example, I want to serve. And I go into a government department that doesn't want to serve. I'm not saying that they exist. I'm just saying, I go into a government department that doesn't want to serve. I am going to be frustrated. I am going to be frustrated because I'm working 12 hours a day. Everyone else is working 3 hours a day. So
On that note, I mean, I think the last part, you know, a lot of good officials in government.
Yeah, but, correct. They are. Know,
but
they
but to using your metaphor, there's a lot of matter because of trust issues in government.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the biggest issues, because some people can't even go and leave, because by the time you come back, you're all gone.
Yeah.
Because of sociopath
behavior.
But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're pretty much wrapping up on this beautiful conversation here with Dr. Njabule James Nkosi.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Dembele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. Time really flies when you have a very interesting conversation. For those who have just joined us, I'm in company of Dr. Njabule James Nkosi. We're unpacking the complexities of self-mastery in the context of a broad organization. What some of the officials are going through, and how to navigate those very complex spaces. So, as in his capacity as a mentor, in his capacity as a coach, in his capacity as a project manager, we're sort of blending all these kinds of insights, so that he's able to give us some kind of nuanced thinking to better ourselves as we go. Before we took that break, he made a very interesting metaphor around the type of individuals that exist within an organization. The first category is the fools, the ones that shoot themselves, purely because they're not tuned in. The other one is a martyr, and the person who never goes to who never goes on leave. He's always taking, orders, and he's always putting the interest of the organization even at the expense of his or her own health.
Mm.
That's a matter. And the sociopath. The sociopath, he defines sociopaths as those that are playing politics, those that want to win at all costs, they want the glory and the media and that attention, and very little on the substance.
So
ultimately, he said, how do you become a winner? You know, and that's where we left it off. Coming back to winners, you can only be a winner, Ngosi, when you've been supported, when you've got a sponsor, from the top. If I'm your manager, and I've noted potential, you're always diligent.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, there are gaps in your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
How important is having a sponsor with the organization, irrespective of your flaws, your limitation, but the person who believes in you that in the next 5 years, I will have Njabule as the next CEO, an example?
That is it's critically important, because anybody with an opportunity has a shot. Without the opportunity, it doesn't matter how good you are. And a lot of people who are very competent in organizations, they're not getting the visibility because they don't have someone who can sponsor them or someone who can advocate for them in the rooms that they are not present. That's what a sponsor is. A sponsor is someone who says, Nimrod is very good at what he does. when you at that board meeting, at that steerco, at that industry meeting, they always are singing your praises when you are not there. Now, what I say to people coming into organizations and people wanting to get promotions is, first and foremost, how can a sponsor, one, sing your praises if there are no praises to be sung?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not doing what you said you would do, if you're not showing up, if you don't have the growth mindset to say, I may not know about a specific domain or may not have the skill, but I'm going to take my own money, my own time, and I'm going to learn and master that own skill. So then I need to say, good track record that I can talk about Nimrod in the rooms that he's not in there, because with a sponsor has got influence, because a sponsor with no influence is not a sponsor at all. They've got influence, they've got industry knowledge, they've got pull, and they believe in what they're seeing. Sponsors are always winners, by the way. I've never found a good sponsor who's a sociopath. Sponsors are always winners. And so for you, if to get that sponsor is normally a line manager of yours or the line manager's line manager, right? So they'll see that, okay, Nimrod has got this potential. He's good at this field. He definitely can be the next COO, definitely can next be the next CEO. And I've had sponsors do exactly the same thing for me. So I'm talking from practical lived experience, whereby they say, in order for you to be at this point, you need to be, number one, show up on time. You need to get your governance sorted. You need to understand the executive language. So for those people who need sponsors, you need to at least show that you're competent at something. Then the sponsor needs to believe in you. And the sponsor has got the characteristics of saying, I don't have what they quote unquote call a soul spirit. Like that's a biblical term. You know, King Saul always wanted to kill King David because he saw talent in King David and he was insecure. A sponsor's not insecure. A sponsor's got that pull. And then they'll push your name and then they'll send you on the courses, they'll send you on the classes. They'll invite you to high level meetings that you feel you've got no business being in there. I don't know if for some people who are listening out there, it's a personal experience. I've been invited to places where I'm like, what am I actually doing here? But you're there because your sponsor believed in you. So for you to get that sponsor, you first and foremost have to prove yourself capable of doing the work and have a strong level of integrity of doing the work, whatever's right, when nobody's looking. The sponsor is always a winner. And if your sponsor is there to, if there's someone who wants to put you in a position just so that they can benefit, that's sociopathic behavior. So for those people who are very good at their job and they're frustrated as to why they're not moving up in the organization, you need to have a balance of being able to manage your own personal brand and being able to manage your own personal PR. Because you can be doing well on a project, for example, but then people are not seeing the reports from the project. How is the sponsor going to look at you? How is the industry going to find you? So you need to make sure that you are visible and not work in your own corner, because the sponsor will find you if you do the good job, number one, and then make sure it's visible throughout the organization.
I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly what sponsors look for. Because they would sing praises for you because you've proven yourself.
Yes.
Because they would know that you make them shine.
Yes.
You know?
You make them look good.
You make them look good.
Yeah.
Because that's all what everybody needs. Mm. You make me look good so that I can go play golf.
Yes.
I know that everything is taken care of.
Correct.
You know. But anyway, we're going to have to put a stop in here. But I think it's important to inform the listener that you've written a book.
I've written three.
Yeah, you've written a book. Before we quickly, it's titled The Father of the Man, The Five Ideas. Just quickly, in the next 30 seconds, because I think it's important. I will definitely go through it at some point, and I'll invite you, having gone through a chapter two.
Yeah.
Take us through. 30 seconds.
30 seconds. We have a crisis, not of money, not of technology, but a crisis of men, because men feel that they put into obscurity. Women need protectors, providers, promoters, priests, and organization need very strong men, very capable men, indispensable men. So this is looking at that crisis. How do we build better men? Not perfect men, but better men who are going to be changing the world and moving the needle forward, and how we can transform the nation and this world by focusing on how we build men of integrity, men of strength, men of responsibility, and men of consciousness. And those five ideals is the journey to take us onto that road to building better men.
Well, there we are. Thank you so much. That was Dr. Njabule, James Nkosi, giving us synopsis of the book that I promised to read. But other than that, the gist of our conversation was about self-mastery in the context of organizational leadership. Food for thoughts around mentorship, food for thought around coaching, food for thought about diagnosing the type of organization and how to become a winner. And I think that's a take home, how to become a winner. And I certainly subscribe to the posture that you put forward in becoming a winner. Let's do this again next week, Craig. Thank you so much. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Shalom.